Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone. Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Asen Wasata. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Salbona. In Senegal, Nangadek. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia. Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all. Join us live on the on-air radio network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do want to talk to you. And joining us live from London, England, is our Saturday morning host, Jana.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening, grand rising.
Yes, it's evening where you are. Afternoon where we are. Yes, we're just passing the noon hour, and there is, what is it, 6 o'clock there in the evening?
Yes, it's 6 o'clock here. So today is almost over. But I've got some really good news, which is that I've acquired a brand new laptop today.
Oh, that is
fantastic. Of course, I haven't even taken it out of the box yet. But it means hopefully some of my technical difficulties will be diminishing or disappearing now.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, that's really what they make these machines for, that you will have to get an upgrade. Just like a car, you know, it'll serve you for a while. And then...
Well, I was going to get a really good one, but I'm still waiting for some of my cash flow to start flowing. So I thought I really need a laptop now. So I've got a little cheap one, and that will have to tide me over until I can get the one that I want. But soon, I'll get a more powerful one.
Ah, yes.
But today, I'm not in the studio at all because I've just acquired my new laptop. It's still in the box, but I can do my little intro if you like. Welcome to the Success Strategy Show with me, Jana, on the Female Solution Worldwide Radio and TV Network. I'm the author of Success Strategies for Black People and Affirmations for Parents, and I host the annual blogging carnival for nonviolence. And I'm your host for today and the first Saturday of every month. Here on the Success Strategy Show, every month we try to help you and support you to find solutions to your problems. We're here to help you make 2024 your best year yet. Today, my guest is William. Is William in the house?
Let's see.
William in the house?
He hasn't joined us yet.
Okay, well, he will be. He is doing some really exciting stuff. He's a teacher of many years' experience based in Florida, and he teaches tech. He teaches to elementary school students, and he also teaches in higher education. And he, what he's doing now as well, alongside his wife, Aida, is he is teaching in Africa as well. So he's teaching in Kenya, in Nigeria, and in South Africa. So I'm very excited to hear what he has to say. Our topic for today is what do men want. Last month we were talking about what the women want, and we had a very interesting discussion. And this month we're going to be talking about what the men want. So I'm very, very interested to know what William has got to talk about. He's also setting up a book project, and he's looking for authors, because what he's doing is on one of his websites, he's putting book covers, different book covers, which will be relevant to children, but also some of them will be relevant for adults as well. If you're a writer, if you're an author, if you had a book published and you want to promote it, this is an opportunity to get it promoted.
But anyway,
we'll wait for William to join us.
You know, as we look forward to hearing from William, I think when we as women look at the state of our relationships and we have all these demands of what men ought to do. And sometimes we get resentful when they tell us what they would like from us. But really, in order for us to have harmonious relationships, we need to listen to each other. You can't just be one-sided. You do for me what I want to do, and then I treat you however I want to treat you. There's got to be a give and take. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of relationships, because people are looking at what can you do for me instead of how we can help each other feel fulfilled. And that's what a relationship is supposed to be about. You look for that partner in life that's going to share your good experiences and even help you through some of your difficulties, and you're going to do
the same.
It can't be one-sided.
Right.
So what do you think about?
I completely agree with you, and that's one of the exciting things about what William's doing, the work that he is doing, because he's doing a lot of this work side by side with his wife. And this is what we need. We need to find a partner who shares our values. You know, we share their values. They share our ideals and our goals and our plans, and we share theirs. And together, we work together to fulfill our ambitions and our goals and our dreams.
Yes.
Yeah, as you said, it can't be one-sided.
Now, one thing that I think has had a tremendous impact on relationships, the culture in many countries has changed because there's been a time for a long time where the attitude toward women is that you're here to serve us.
That's a theme
repeated in many religions. And of course, they're man-made. That's why that's the theme. So the idea is that your function as a female is to learn how to please a male. And
exactly.
That has been culturally accepted all across the globe. I'm not pointing to any one group of people. You can find it in Asian cultures. You can find it in African cultures.
Yes.
You can find it in European cultures. So we can't point the finger at any one group. Everybody's done it. And, of course,
There's this fascinating documentary series on the BBC a few years ago. And it was about that very thing. And they went to different parts of the world at different times, and they found the same phenomenon where women had power, women had freedom, women were able to control their own destiny to a certain extent, and women were respected and had their place in society and were contributing to society. And then the regime was overturned by a patriarchal regime, and then women's freedoms were taken away, women's agency was taken away, and women found themselves in situations where, like, for example, they weren't even allowed to go outside.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the program about Vietnam. It happened in Vietnam. I've seen the program that was about France, and they're talking about the French Revolution. Women had power and agency at the time of the French Revolution. And a whole bunch of women actually marched through the night from Paris down to Versailles, stormed the palace, and captured the king and queen, Marie Antoinette and Louis, I think it was Louis XVI, and took them with them back to Paris to stand trial. And then after Napoleon took power, then he brought in the Napoleonic codes, and that meant that women weren't allowed to do anything. Women weren't allowed to vote. I think that women weren't even allowed to go outside sometimes. And women finally got the vote again. Guess what year women got the vote again?
What year was that?
1947.
Wow.
Yeah. So you're talking from the late 18th century onwards, women had no power to vote and had no voice, you know, in terms of having a political voice. They didn't have one.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, just look at that.
But like you just said, this has been repeated over and over again in different parts of the world at different times in history. The same pattern has emerged.
Same pattern has emerged. Patriarchy. And we're on the screen now. I've got various images of patriarchal systems. This is, again, it's not restricted to one particular ethnic group or continent.
That's right.
A global struggle that women have had to go through century after century. Men have decided that women should be subservient, and they've made it part of the religious teaching that God said women
exactly
are supposed to be subservient, and women were the ones that sinned and disobeyed and all of that, the whole Adam and Eve story. Why are we not even questioning the validity of that? You get indoctrinated with that propaganda.
But what's happened is that men feel that they have to control women.
Yeah. And why?
Men believe that they have to control women. They must control women. And so they bring in all these laws in order to curtail women's freedoms and women's rights, you know, completely take away women's rights. There was there was a drama series on TV a few years ago, and it was called The State, and it was about Islamic State. And it was really shocking because everything that happened in this program was based on reality, on what's happened in real life. And all these, it's focusing on these five young people from Britain, these five young British people who decide they want to join up with Islamic State. And so they travel. They don't say exactly what country they're in, right? But they travel to wherever it is. And the first thing the women are told, they live in this big shared house, and the first thing that they're told is don't believe what you see on Facebook. You have to be married here. And they can't even leave the house. They're not even allowed to leave the house without their husband's permission.
And, you know, there are a lot of cultures where that's still the case. And now patriarchy, we've got up on the screen here, is a definition. In sociology, patriarchy is described as a form of social organization where cultural and institutional beliefs and values are dominated by men. This leads to male-oriented decision-making and social organization. Patriarchy literally means the rule of the fathers. The opposite, matriarchy, means role of the mothers.
Mm.
Now, an example of patriarchal legal system. In patriarchal societies, the laws and rules are biased toward males. Legal provisions and laws are in favor of men, which leaves women exposed. For example, a patriarchal legal system may require men to sign documents on behalf of their wives. So this was a very recent prevalent situation when it came to if you wanted to buy a home or property, a woman had to have her husband's signature. We're talking about within the last century where this was the case. This was the practice where women, and very recently, as recent as the 1950s, if a woman was widowed and her husband, the name of the house and everything was in his name, the bank account in his name, she really had a hard time trying to function because nothing was in her name and she had no legal authority over anything. So this.
That's right. That's right, and I mean, it wasn't even that long ago. We're talking 40, 50 years ago.
Yes.
Excuse me, because I remember Butchie Machita. Do you know who Butchie Machita is or was?
I don't.
She was a Nigerian novelist, and she's based here in London, but she's originally from Nigeria. And she's actually my tutor when I did my postgraduate diploma. She wrote over 20 books, right, and English was her fifth language, but I remember her saying, it might have been in one of her books, but I remember her saying that because her husband was very abusive, right? They had five children, and she was the one that was earning, and she was studying at the same time, which is, I think, is quite typical, really. A lot of us find ourselves in that situation, but she wanted to leave him, and so she rented a place to live. And told the landlord that her husband was traveling, but he'd be back. That's the only way that she could rent a property for herself and her children. And she was the one that was earning, but she had to have her husband's permission to rent a property. Yeah, and this is a man, as I said, he was abusive, and he burnt her first book.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
And she told us, if I hadn't left him, I would never have written anything. But this is the situation that a lot of women found themselves in, and a lot of women still do now. And, you know, during the pandemic and all the lockdowns, domestic violence increased. And, you know, it's a really desperate situation for some women.
You know, this is a very sensitive topic every time it's brought up, and I'm glad we're doing it on the show of What Do Men Want? Because you have so many people who are very staunch religious people, and they will insist that it's spiritually correct, when in fact, if you are able to go back into the history of humanity beyond what is now current considered history, prehistory of this dispensation, if you will, of human society, there was a time when women were dominant. Just as men were dominant, women were very dominant, and men were subservient. So we're seeing a swinging of the pendulum back to the other extreme.
It has swung. The pendulum has swung back, yes, definitely. Because as you just said, as we both just said, it happens all over the world.
Yes.
Different cultures, different religions. And from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the strictures on women within Islam are meant to be there to protect women. You know, things that we in the West might look at and say, this is too restrictive or this is oppressive, those were certainly originally put in place by the Prophet in order to protect women. Would you like to say anything about that?
So, absolutely. And, you know, this has been, and I know that I have a purpose on this planet, and I know part of that purpose to address the racism and the scars that have ensued as a result so that we as a people can heal. And I know that my other purpose is to address the oppression of women. And
right.
That
yeah, because you talk about the fact that the energies are out of balance, the energies are out of alignment. And that is very, very true. We've gone too much in the wrong direction now in terms of male dominance. And we need to have a balance. We need to find a balance.
We need to have a balance. And I observe even the concept of protecting women. And, you know, I want us to deconstruct that idea. If we're all in the process of evolving to higher consciousness and we're coming out of it, where women were abused and there was a high level of rape and, you know, you had all across the world women being sold as whether it's sex slaves or whatever the case may be, they were treated like property to be sold. And this was part of many cultures. So the idea, first of all, of covering women so that they would not be exploited, their bodies would not be used as things, and they would not be objectified, as they say. That was the intention. But every deed is judged by its ultimate intention. And if the intention is for us to raise our consciousness so that we learn how to treat each other as equal beings, equal of respect, at some point the decision has to be, if I'm a male, that I am evolving out of that barbaric attitude toward the females of my species so that they can be safe in my presence. It can't be.
Well, absolutely. But I remember many, many years ago when I was doing my degree, we had this meeting. Now, I don't remember who organized the meeting, but we some of us had a lot of questions for the Islamic people, the Islamic women. And the Islamic women, as far as I can remember, none of them were actually from the United States, but they were studying there. And what they explained to us is that those strictures which were put into place to protect women, they were meant to be, in terms of like dressing a certain way and covering yourself and so forth, they were meant to be observed during wartime. Now, one could argue that it's always wartime, right? There's always a war going on somewhere. But this is what we were told at the time, that those things were put into place to protect women during wartime. Now, as we know, if a man decides to attack a woman or a child sexually, it doesn't actually matter how she dresses. He'll still do it. That's my understanding.
Absolutely.
If you have a whole bunch of men in this situation and they want to attack the women and or the children, they will do so. They don't really care look what's just happened in Gaza. They didn't care what those women were wearing. They didn't care.
Absolutely. And this is why I know it's necessary for us to address that whole rape issue. Rape has nothing to do with sexual desire. Rape is a hate crime. That's why it's done.
Yes, it is, and it's about power. It's everything to do with power.
It's about power and to degrade and denigrate and humiliate. That's what it's meant to. It's a weapon. It has nothing to do with how you're
dressed. Absolutely, it's a weapon.
It's a weapon. It's a weapon of war. So that
yes,
being
absolutely.
Case,
it is. And you have this in any situation where there are oppressors and there are the oppressed. Right, rape happens in any situation where there's the oppressor and there were the oppressed. And then, of course, in slavery, in terms of the African diaspora, there was also a financial incentive, because if a man could get a woman pregnant or make sure that she becomes pregnant, then that was more money. That was more money for the slave master.
Yeah, her offspring. It wasn't about love or I love my child. It's like, oh, I want a human being that's worth a certain dollar figure that I can sell.
Yes.
So there's emotional
yes.
attachment to that act. And this is what women have to understand, that are holding on to the thought that if a woman is violated physically, she did something to cause it. And there are some women who have had
yes,
that experience,
yes.
and they're still blaming themselves because they don't understand that a man makes a choice to violate you because he has no respect for himself. A man who
yes.
has respect for himself would not commit that act. So
that's right, and also, you know, the same men that are committing the act also have mothers, they have wives, they have daughters. So it's as if they don't respect their own flesh and blood either.
Absolutely. And so if you're in a process of spiritual evolution, the goal has to be that you evolve, not that you
yes.
keep repressing the women because, well, you know, they might get raped. Well, at what point is it your responsibility to evolve out of that mindset where you don't have regard
yes.
for the life of a human being? That's what the religion is for.
Well, absolutely,
for
yeah. But I think there's always going to be men out there who see women as objects. And I don't think this society is actually helping that situation at all. You know, they have these men that call themselves incels. Have you heard of this?
I've heard of that. What does that mean?
Incel stands for involuntary celibate, right? So in other words, men who can't find a partner.
Oh, that's
And from what I understand, I've never read any incel material, and I'm probably never going to, but from what I understand, it's very, very misogynistic. They hate women. They resent women. And I'm thinking, if you hate and resent women that much, then you're not going to find a partner. It's not going to happen. Because, I mean, my understanding of celibacy from a Buddhist point of view is that it has to be freely chosen. There's no such thing as involuntary celibacy, right? It just means you don't have a partner, right? You want one and you don't have one. That's what it is.
Right.
They call themselves incels.
Oh, so it's involuntary celibacy. But like you're describing, it sounds more like a resentment of women as opposed to a respect or reverence for women. And so I'm just showing some images on the screen here about patriarchy. And then, of course, it says patriarchy, derived from the patriarch in Greek, is a term for societies in which male is the favored gender and in which men hold power, dominion, and privilege. And male power in a patriarchy can be found at family, community, and social levels. Now, this one picture that's on the screen now has a woman with her mouth taped shut. And it's generally the kind of attitude, and you have that in many cultures where women are supposed to be kept silent. They're not supposed to speak in houses of worship. They're not supposed to speak in public. So you have that as part of many cultures around the world. And I've experienced environments where that is the mindset of men.
Mm-hmm.
And these might be men who really believe that they're doing what is spiritually correct.
Right.
But I would always be shocked when men who are African-American descendants of probably some of the latest history's worst repression would agree to that treatment of women, knowing that we collectively endured that and we should never want to see another human being repressed. We should
That's
know
right.
better.
Well,
we,
yeah, one would think that, yes. One would hope that would be the case. There's this famous woman, I think she was from Brazil, and she's always pictured with a mask over her face, and she's based on a real historical figure who, I think she refused to have sex with someone, a slave master, and so he forced her to wear a mask, and she died. She got TB, and she died. And yeah, there are many, many different images of this lady. I'm sorry, I know one of her titles is In Scarborough or something, which is Portuguese for enslaved. But she's a very, very well-known and well-loved figure because, you know, she embodies that struggle that so many women have had to go through, you know, not even being allowed to speak.
Not even being allowed to speak. Now, here, the picture on the screen, a woman holding up a sign, of course, at a woman's rally, it says, "Patriarchy, out of my courtroom, out of my bedroom, out of my wardrobe." This is the sign that the woman is holding up. And you think about court, you know, I mean, women could not serve on juries. It was just men. And if there was a rape trial, she'd always have to prove it wasn't consent. Like, why does she have to prove that she
That's
was
right.
violated? I mean, rape is such a crime. It's a very personal crime. Two people.
Yeah, it is.
And
but,
one
you know, in the rest of the criminal justice system, it's supposed to be the presumption of innocence until proven guilty of the person that perpetrated the crime. But this is saying that
right.
the victim is guilty and the victim has to prove
right.
that she's not guilty.
Right. That's what has created so much anger between the sexes. When you are violated and then you're treated as if you are guilty and then you have
to prove
that you're guilty. And I understand because there have been men that have been falsely accused of rape, and there have been cases where men have been killed for a false accusation. So this is a very deep wound between men and women. And if our religious beliefs are supposed to heal us, they can't be reflecting the same philosophy that created the wound. And
they often are. I mean, did you notice in the news the past couple of days, the Taliban have said they're going to start stoning women to death in public?
So what does that say about what is in the hearts of those men? You know, that is hate. That's hate. And sometimes men are angry because women have hurt them or have made them feel bad, you know, their self-esteem and all of that has been crushed. So if you're harboring that kind of hatred, you take that to the courtroom. You take that to every aspect of society and enact that hostility towards women. So that's what's happening there. You're stoning women to death. Are you stoning men to death? And what kind of human being stone anybody to death? So there's
well, yeah, that's right. But you see, they can say, well, it says in the Quran to do this. And I know that it says it in the Bible as well. So, you know, this is what I call, I have a phrase for this. My phrase for this is blaming God for your own bad behavior.
Yes, that's what that is.
You know,
blaming
like
God.
Beating children. People use the Bible as an excuse to beat children.
Yes. And how,
you know, I
how
can remember seeing an interview with Michael Jackson's mother, and she was saying, well, the Bible says that we should discipline our children. But Michael has said that he was brutalized. And personally, I believe that that is true.
Absolutely.
You know, so, but people will turn to a religious text and use that as an excuse for their own bad behavior. Well, God told me to do it. Whatever happened to personal responsibility?
Yes.
Anyway, I'm going to suggest that we take a break, and I'm going to try and ring my guest, if that's okay.
Yes, I think this is a good time to take a break, and we are so grateful to have Jana joining us live from London to talk
that's
about.
So lovely. That's lovely. I'm happy to be here.
Yes.
Yeah, you're in the studio, right? Because I'm definitely not tonight.
We're going to take a quick break and come on back, and we're looking forward to our guest that's going to answer that question. What do men want? We'll
that's
be right
it.
Back.
Yeah.
Stay with us. Yeah. And here we go.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm sorry, I'm
Hope you and in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, Black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex. Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three Black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Hi, I'm Naima McKee. And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using an electronic device to talk to people. In these times, people are using the internet to talk to everybody. Friends, neighbors, family members, co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great news. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a media connection. Somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's what I'm talking to you today. We produce programs, and our audience members are people who shop. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repairs, transportation services, child care services. Whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your media connection. Just follow this link, and tomorrow you can sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing, share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives.
Join us as we bring you those issues that are affecting our lives. Well, today we're asking the question, what do men want? Because we have had so many conflicts when it comes to male and female relationships. So our first Saturday of the month host, joining us live from London, England, Jana has asked the question, what do men want? And last month we explored, what do women want? Well, I think we need to hear from the men. Do you really want a society where you're dominating the women? And how do you feel about an equal partnership? And is there just a certain way you'd like to be treated and made to feel special? And do you think you could do that without it being forced? I think so. I think that we can have wonderful relationships without men forcing their will on women. Well, we're back with Jana, and we're looking forward to hearing from our guest, who will be William Jackson, who has taught elementary school and higher education for many years in the U.S. as well as Kenya, Nigeria, and South Africa. And he introduces them to tech skills alongside with his wife, Aida. And I'm looking forward to hearing from him, Jana, because he's been experiencing various cultures around the world, and he has a perspective of maybe some common things as well as maybe some things that are unique to specific African cultures. You've been to Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa. I know people from all three of those places, and so there are different cultures, even though it's all on one continent. Maybe he kind of has a perspective of how it differs from American culture. Do you think that we have maybe a unique cultural perspective here because of our experience, or do you think there are some commonalities between the male and female relationships here and abroad?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Well, my thought is that I want to learn more about this because, I mean, I do hear about things that happen in other countries that I'm really, really not happy about. But that doesn't mean everything in this country is wonderful either. I mean, you might have heard of Wayne Cousins. He was a police officer, and when we were in one of the lockdowns during COVID, he kidnapped.
Yeah, I heard a bit about that. You know, there were so many things that happened during that whole COVID experience that gave us an insight about the problems we need to address, because people have to stay indoors with each other and really experience life with each other in a way that you don't do when you're always working, always traveling, nobody's really at home, you kind of pass each other in the night. But there were a lot of issues that came to the surface during the COVID lockdown.
Absolutely. And because he was a police officer, she believed him when he said he was arresting her. And he put her in a car in handcuffs, took her somewhere, and raped her and killed her. And, you know, a lot of people are obviously up in arms about that. A lot of women were saying they don't feel safe in London anymore. But when I look at things like, for example, what happened to Joy Gardner, you know, it's like, what does it take before people start to particularly white people, start to realize how toxic the culture of the police really is and can be? Because black people have been saying the same things for years. Black people have been dying in police custody for years.
Yeah.
As I said, this guy was a serving police officer. He committed offenses before that to do with exposing himself, and they were never followed up. Nothing happened. You know, nothing was done about it. So he's still a serving police officer. And then we find out that there's some WhatsApp group in which other police officers, including Wayne Cousin, were posting very, very misogynistic messages. So this is what I would call toxic masculinity. As far as I'm concerned, that is toxic masculinity. What do you think?
Oh, definitely toxic masculinity. And when you have a situation where people are given ultimate authority, like in police officer case, then people misbehave, and because there are no consequences, it's encouraged. So then that does create an environment.
Yeah. They encourage each other. They egg each other on sometimes.
And that's the thing that has been the undercurrent of the culture. Our Wednesday co-host, my Wednesday co-host, Kareem Hamid, for a year he did a series, a men-only discussion series, and they started out talking about how men are raised to think about how to use women. Other men school them on how to seduce women, how to lie to women, how to play women, you know, all kinds of things. Not how to marry, how to find someone that you trust, you respect, you want to bring into your family, but basically how to exploit women. That's a skill that's taught by older men. And so it becomes part of the culture.
Well, I remember I knew a guy, lovely, sweet guy. I think he was Nigerian parentage, and he told me he used to have loads of women. and other men would come to him and ask him for advice.
Yeah.
His father had loads of women, so it was like he learned from his father how to treat women. And so, you know, other men would come to him and he would coach them about how to lie and how to do what you want, how to get the woman to do what you want and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he was all fine with that until one day he saw his father's partner with another man. And it's like all of a sudden it came home to him what he'd been doing for all these years. And that caused him to change his behavior. And at that time he was seeing 5 different women. And he decided the one that was the most important to him, and that's the one he ended up married to.
Wow.
You know, and he's faithful to her because she's the most important woman to him.
Mm.
But it took seeing his father's partner with another man to make him realize what he'd been doing all these years and what his father had been doing.
Sure, women, yes. Well, you know, here on a feminist professor gave a definition of patriarchy we have on the screen. It says, patriarchy is the institutionalization of androcentrism, a cultural system of male domination and privilege which has empowered men to control and limit female possibilities, restricting their bodies and lives. So that's her definition. And you know, it says it is patriarchy that says men are stupid and monolithic and unchanging and incapable. It's patriarchy that says men have animalistic instincts and just can't stop themselves from harassing and assaulting. It's patriarchy that says men can only be attracted by certain qualities, can only have particular kinds of responses, can only experience the world in narrow ways. Feminism holds that men are capable of more and are than that. So really, if men are worried about...
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Feminism is actually saying you have the power to be a decent human being.
And treat others with respect. And treat yourself with respect.
Yes. Yes.
Because on some level, if you're not treating someone else with respect, then you're not treating yourself with respect either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is the thing. If you believe... As a man, if you believe that women have to be protected from you raping them, then you don't have any respect for yourself. Because rape is not an instinct. A sex drive, that's a natural instinct. But to violate someone, to violently force the sex act, that is not a natural instinct. That is not. And so the idea that you are so animalistic, and I'm going to tell you something, animals do not force sex. Rape is not...
Well, sometimes they do, I hate to say. There is sexual violence in the animal world as well.
There's sexual violence among one other species of animal. And I looked this up when I was writing the book, The Female Solution.
Yeah.
There are only 2 species of beings that rape. Human beings and apes.
Well, you see, I live with cats, and I know a lot about cats, and this is one of the things I've personally witnessed, that cats will also sexually violate each other.
Wow, that's pretty awful. Now, are these...
Yes, it is. It's awful, but it happens. You know, just because something is natural doesn't mean it's a good thing. Not everything that's natural is good. But I've known that to happen, and I've also, from what I understand, some waterfowls also commit sexual violence as well.
Now, what I've researched in terms of when animals commit sexual violence, it's always when there are unnatural conditions in their environment, because chimpanzees and humans are the only ones who rape as a, I guess you'd say, a cultural way of interacting with the females of their species. But now elephants have been known to rape when their environment is disturbed and there's an unnatural imbalance between males and females because of killing, the poaching. Ducks have been observed raping when they're in an unnatural environment where their wings are and I was researching this, and I think I might have told this story. I was researching about rape because my theory was that, you know, animals don't rape. And then I was in the library, and I was reading about how sometimes in the zoos, you know, how they have the big enclosures with the birds.
Yes.
And so if they have, if they have clipped the wings of a female bird and she can't get away, she might be gang raped by a bunch of male birds. And of course,
oh God, that's
being
awful.
In enclosure where
that's
she can't
awful.
Get away, that's an unnatural environment. So I'm sitting there in the library reading this, and somehow it just hit me so hard. You know, a female duck being raped, she can't get away because she's in a cage, her wings are clipped. I started crying, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, crazy. So I had to put a book in front of me, you know, because I didn't want the guard to come over, you know, and say, ma'am, are you okay? You know, I mean, how do I explain why I'm in tears? Oh, my God, they raped a dog. I mean, she thought it was some kind of nuts. But it just hit me so hard that when we create an unnatural environment for animals, then into acting the unnatural way that we act. Because human society has created unnatural environments, the crowding of housing projects and just the unnaturalness of the way we live and the extreme stress.
Yeah, that's very true.
Poverty, all of those things that are unnatural to a life of
joy.
Oh,
yeah, no, absolutely. But, I mean,
so,
if you remember, I don't know if you've heard or read about the Magdalene homes, the Magdalene sisters?
I don't think I've heard of them.
Okay, let me explain. Yeah, this is about what was happening in Ireland, that women were sent off to these homes where they were basically brutalized by nuns. And some of the reasons, and Ireland is I bring this up because Ireland is a very, very rural country by and large. I mean, there are cities in Ireland, but by and large it's a very rural country. And people are living, you know, close to the land, but maybe in some situations they're not that well educated. And so if a woman was raped, right, the film focuses on four women in particular, and it's based on a book called The Magdalene Sisters as well. Well, like, one of the women is raped at a wedding, and she's at her cousin's wedding, and her father finds out, or she tells him or something. And the next day, the priest comes and collects her and takes her to the Magdalene home. And the Magdalene home was like a prison. And once you were in there, you were in there for life. And, there wasn't a trial. Not that she'd done anything wrong anyway, but once you're in there, you're shut in there for life. And women in those days, you know, if a young woman had a baby and she wasn't married, she could be sent to Magdalene home.
Oh, wow.
And I strongly recommend that you read it or you watch the film. Actually, I don't think I've read the book, but I've read quite a few articles about it, and I have seen the film a couple of times. And you know when the last Magdalene home closed?
When did it finally close?
You ready for another shock? 1994.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, to me it's not about, I mean, I think you've got a point. I do think you've got a point, but it's not just about whether it's a natural or unnatural environment. These people are doing what they are told is what God wants them to do, but the nuns that are running these places are so cruel. They are so cruel. And they will judge a woman because she's had a baby out of wedlock. They will judge. Oh, you know that film? I don't know if you've ever seen that film, Philomena, starring Dame Judi Dench.
It sounds familiar. I think I may have seen it years and years ago. You know, and that's
because the same thing happens, and again, it's a true story. These are all true stories. Again, it happens where this woman, when she was very young, got pregnant, and she was sent to a Magdalene home. Now, she was not kept in there for life, but her baby was taken away from her, and people came from the States, and all they needed to have was £1,000 and be Catholic, and then they could take a baby and adopt it. And so she spent her whole life trying to find her son, and that's what the film is about. And she finally finds out where he went and what happened to him and so forth. But it's a true story. And you know, this is what was done to women and girls, and in the States as well, I believe, there was a time when if you got pregnant outside of marriage, you could be put into a mental hospital.
Well, that's another thing. And see, this is another thing. The oppression of women can only happen with the consent of women. So when you live in a society where women are this, that's when it's 1994. So that tells you something about us. And this slide I have on the screen now, it says, feminism requires precisely what patriarchy destroys in women, unimpeachable bravery in confronting male power. So if someone beats down, then you don't have the ability to resist when they're oppressing you. And that's what happens. And when you have women who are complicit and upholding a system of oppressing women, you can never get rid of the system. So
that's right.
Every movie I've seen
that's
about
right,
them,
women are perpetuating it. And these are women who did what they did because they believed that's what God wanted them to do. But they also were in a system where they looked down on other women.
So this
right. If
again,
you're a woman, if you're a nun and you've chosen a celibate life, then in those situations, they look down on women who chose to be sexually active.
Yes.
And by the way, not all the women that were in the Magdalene homes, not even all the women in this particular film, were sexually active. Right? One woman was put in there because she was considered to be too pretty.
That is also a lot of what those homes were. They would penalize women who were, let me know what that is. That's just jealousy. They would penalize
yeah,
women
that's
who were
right.
attractive.
It's envy.
They would shave their head and wear all these, you know, drab clothes and penalize them for being sexual because they had chosen to not express their sexuality. So they want to penalize and punish and treat cruelly women who had. And criminalize
that's
them.
Right.
And we got to look
that's
at
right.
what,
yeah.
what does that say about what's inside of us that we do that to other women? And why are we believing, why are we swallowing the idea that God is repressing sexuality and making it a criminal act? Why have we accepted
yeah, absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
a lot of people have that attitude. I was certainly brought up with the attitude that people who had sex outside of marriage, there was something wrong with them, that they were deranged.
You know, I can understand, again, there's the intention behind something when it was meant to correct the problem, and then there's the intention behind it when it's meant to be a source of oppression. The intention
in
regulating or advising or creating a system where people would make a commitment to each other is because if you're producing a child, you need to be jointly responsible for that child for the sake of the child's well-being. That's what the whole point of it is, so that the child
ideally will be yes, but as we know, many people are not
right. So then if you have
many
you
women
have
find themselves in a position where they're alone. I just saw a film about Bob Marley the other day. A new film has come out about Bob Marley. And I saw a documentary about him a few years ago as well. And in the documentary, it said because his father was white, his father had a job which took him all over the island of Jamaica. And he just had women basically in every port, every town that he visited. He had different women. So he had a different woman. So he had children with them. And Bob Marley, to a certain extent, also behaved the same way. Although he was married, he had lots of women. He had children with different women. And sometimes he used to get his wife. You know, like if there's a woman in his dressing room, sometimes he would send for his wife and say, look, I can't get her to leave. Can you get her out of here, please? His wife would come in and help him out in difficult situations.
That's a bit of a mess. You know, I look at the way women are criminalized if they have a child out of wedlock, when in fact it's the man who is not intending to be a responsible husband for his child.
No, they don't have
that
in their mind at that moment. No, they don't.
That would be the violation against the society is what it is. Because the society wants to make sure all the children are taken care of. And parents have that responsibility. If you're having sex,
yes,
you're opening the door for life to come through you, and that means you need to be committed to that life that comes through you to take care of its well-being. That's what should happen. If your intention is to just experience sex without regard for all of the lives that you're affecting, well, then that's a violation against the community in which you are existing. So the
you might think that, and I might think that, but we know that in the heat of the moment, sometimes values just go out the window. Sometimes people don't have those values in the first place. If you've seen your father go from woman to woman, right, if you're a man and you've seen your father go from woman to woman, that is your norm. For you, that's the norm.
So again, you know, if men are teaching men to basically be as sexually active with men as they have the skills to be, standard, that's the value that they're teaching, you can't then punish women for being sexually active. Because
they do. One could say this about Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson, his second wife, was pregnant when he married her. They had four children together. His third wife, Carrie, who he's with now, had a baby with him before they got married. He has told so many lies and committed so much deception just within his private life, not even starting to talk about his political life yet. And they say that his father was very much the same. This is what it said. Stanley Johnson, you know, was Boris's role model.
Yeah.
If you're a man and you've grown up with that kind of role model, then what does it take for you to actually develop some kind of some ethical practices, some ethical behaviors, some kind of moral compass?
I think one of the first things when we raise children, we must raise them with empathy for other people. Because when you have that, when you can instill in a child, think about how you would feel if someone treated you like this. If you can instill that kind of quality, then teaching them to do right is easy. Because you always think about how are you affecting everybody else. Whatever you do affects everybody whose life you touch. So how are you affecting them? And would you want someone to affect you that way? Would you want someone to make you feel that way? So,
I agree with you, but empathy always has to start with the self. And empathy always has to start with self-empathy. So if you're out hurting other people through your behavior, then in some ways you're hurting yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you just see people as sex objects and you use them as sex objects, then that means you are cut off from your own emotions.
Yeah, yeah. You're not experiencing a real union with another being that would enhance you spiritually. And if you don't know that.
Or in any other way, really.
Don't know. Yeah. So, you know, and I know that men are taught a lot of contradictory things. There is the desire for admiration of other men, you know, which you get if you have women or a pretty woman or, you know, a desirable woman, a woman with high status, that raises your status. If you have a bunch of women, you can raise your status. That means, you must, you know, have great male attributes, whatever they are. So men look at getting the admiration of, first of all, other men, and then whatever thing that they're taught they're going to get from their involvement with a woman, that's what they seek. I mean, that's part of nature. You know, you're attracted to the opposite sex, and thus something happens and you're attracted to the same sex. You know, that's another whole thing, and that's another whole show in itself. But the fact of the matter is people don't understand sexuality as being connected to spirituality. And they've made religious laws to punish people for being sexual. And if the idea of having a regulation for your sexual for your sexual activities was so that you could be in a best position to care for the children that come through you, then even that can't be by force. It has to be because you understand that you're responsible. Once you transition to adulthood and your body is able to reproduce another human body, then there has to be an understanding of the responsibility of that, and you willingly regulate your behavior because you understand the greater consequence of the choices you make. That's something that has to be
instilled. Well, I mean, I would like to think that that happens, but certainly it, for those of us in the African diaspora, we know a lot of those bonds have been broken, have been completely destroyed because of, you know, what we've been through for the past 400 or 500 years, that women were allowed to choose their partners. They had to sleep with whoever the slave master told them to sleep with, have a baby with whoever the slave master wanted them to mate with. And the men were not taught to look after their partners. They weren't even sometimes allowed to have partners. They were just made to go from woman to woman. And we're still living with the consequences of that kind of attitude and behavior now.
Well, I think, you know, if you build on a foundation that's already rocky and crooked, the patriarchy, which says a woman is something I can use, and so then you have a whole continent full of men, and Europeans aren't the only ones who did it, because, you know, we talked about even what happened with Korean women during the war with Japan and how they were used. Same way, okay, we can use these women with no consequences, no moral
right.
judgment, because they can be used.
Right.
So European men did it with African women. Japanese men did it with Korean women. It's been done.
And look what happened during the war. The Germans used Jewish women as prostitutes, and that was a complete contradiction to the fact that it was illegal for them to have sexual relations with Jews.
Yeah, but, you know, if you make it so that, well, you're really a non-person, then I can use you the way that I can't use the women in my own community, and I can do it with impunity because we all agree that you're not really
So that's right. Well, there's good women and there's bad women, and good women can't be used. They have to be respected. But bad women can be used. You can do what you want to them.
Right. So we have seen that happen globally. And it's a mindset where you choose to violate another human being. You choose to do that. Now, what makes an absence of morals and ethics in another person where they find that to be okay? And that becomes something
when society decides
that something that's wrong is okay, well, then it becomes widely expressed. So, you know, a lot of the oppression of women is consented to by other women.
Yeah.
You know, just
or
like,
not just consented to.
The
women participate.
That didn't happen. You know, you know when your husband's out here in the slave cabin raping women, how come that wasn't stopped? You know, you're mad at the woman. But you didn't say to your husband.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's because the white women did not have any power over what their husbands were doing. So they took it. This is the thing. If you're oppressed, then you look for somebody else who you can oppress.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, if you've seen 12 Years of Slave or read the book, you know about this. You've heard about Harriet Jacobs, you know about this. You know, the white woman has this resentment of the black woman because she knows that her husband is attracted to this black woman and can do what he wants to her. But the black woman has no power in that situation. And then, you know, as a result, she incurs the wrath of the white woman. The white woman can't take out her wrath on her husband. She has no power. So therefore, she takes it out on who she can, which is the black woman. And I think, I believe that we're still living with the consequences of those attitudes today.
Yeah. Have you seen that movie, 12 Years a Slave?
This is what I'm talking about.
That's it. Where Lupita Nyong'o got the Oscar. She very much deserved for reliving that so that all of us could see what it looked like and felt like. That was such a common thing. Like you say, the woman is taking out her...
It was very common. It was very common. This is what I was talking about just now, about Harriet Jacobs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of women who went through that who wouldn't write about it. They wouldn't write about it because if they wrote about it, then they were afraid they would be scorned and they would be shunned. So there's a lot of women, you know, who escaped from slavery who wouldn't write about those kind of things. But Harriet Jacobs wrote about it. And it started when she was 15 years old, right? This white man was in his 50s, and she was 15, and he was totally obsessed with her. And his wife hated her and resented her because she knew that her husband wanted to have sex with this woman.
Yeah, there's a book, Jubilee. I don't know if you've ever read that, but same
scenario. I had
scenario.
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the woman who was, I guess, like, well, she was the daughter of the head of the plantation, and when she came into the house to work for the mistress of the house, she was always being beaten and punished and slapped and hit. Because the woman was taking her anger out on this girl who, you know, was the child of her husband, you know.
That's right. And this is what they said. This is what the abolitionists used to say, that the people in the South are buying and selling their own flesh and blood. Because if a man has a child with his wife, a white man has a child with his wife, and he has a child with a black woman, and the two children look alike because they both have the same daddy, then the white woman's going to resent it, and she's going to insist that young woman or child is sold because she feels humiliated. Anybody who comes to the plantation can see the two children and see that they look alike.
Yeah, they can see who the father is. So that's
yeah,
that's
it's
part
obvious.
Of Southern culture. And so we got a lot of sickness in this nation, a lot of emotional illness that is under the surface. And that's so much part of our relationship. We cannot act like it doesn't exist. It's like, what in that movie, Buck and the Preacher, Ruby Dee said, it's like a poison soaked into the ground. That's what this is. So this whole male-female relationship.
Don't think it just happened in one country either. It's happened all over the world, as you know.
And we have to understand that as women. It's a global...
Yeah.
wound that must heal, and it can only heal if we acknowledge it exists and if we acknowledge our complicity in it. Because
absolutely,
about nuns I've seen, they're so brutal toward any girl that looks like she might be attractive, or they're the first ones to be harsh when it comes to punishing somebody for being sexual, and then there's all these abortions that have happened in the convents and the babies that they found
the infanticide.
Infanticide, yes. That means these were babies that were born and then killed. These were not babies that were born and then killed. So this happens, and we have to face this. So I think there has to be a healthier way that we have relationships with men, but we have to listen. Now, what is it that you actually want? And how do we have these desires and needs met in a way that is healthy for both male and female? So now, is your guest going to be able to join us? We're going to take another break.
Okay, well, so far, I'm sorry to say, I have not heard from William. I have phoned him, but I haven't been able to get in touch with him. So I'm hoping he's going to join us.
Well, let's take another break and, you know, try again, see if we can. He has a call-in number?
Yes, he does. Yes.
Okay. All right.
I didn't know what went wrong. Obviously, something went wrong, but I didn't know what it was. I'm sorry. I can only apologize. But I'll give him another bell.
Yeah, things happen. Well, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. And you're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show and live from London. This is Success Strategy.
Can I mention as well, if you've got a question or a comment to make, please phone us on 515-605-9325. And if you're outside of the United States, you need to add 001 to that. So that's 001-515-605-9325. This is Jana with the Success Strategy Show.
Yes. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. Call in with your comment. We'd like to know, what do men want? So men, call on in and give us a clue because we want to hear some cues. We'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
Hi, I'm Naima. And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world.
I'm smiling. I'm doing this. I will talk to you later. Please leave a message.
People on the internet to talk to everybody. Friends, neighbors, family members, co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great news. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a media connection, somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's why I'm talking to you today. We produce programs, and our audience members are people who shop. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repairs, transportation services, child care service, whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your meat. Just follow this link. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money.
I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex.
Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world. Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and joining us live from London is our first Saturday of the month host, Jana. And we've asked the question, what do men want? Well, you know, we've seen what they've done. They want, apparently, a woman who is submissive, subservient, does what they say, obedient, you know, all these things that we see, all of these attributes that are supposedly, they said, well, this is what God said, but come on now. Women, I want you to let me know, did God ever tell you something like that, that you're supposed to subvert your will to someone else's? I don't think so. We're all here for our own free will. Now, with our free will, we have the opportunity to be of service to each other and to be kind and loving to each other. But it's not love if you're beaten into submission. And men, do you really want to beat somebody into submission? Why would you want that? Do you find that's a good, healthy relationship? I certainly want to hear from men on that. So, Jana, what do you think? Have you ever seen a relationship in which someone was forcibly suppressed and they felt good about it?
I don't think that's possible, actually. I really don't think it's possible. But I have met people who said they were glad that they were beaten. And I remember Oprah Winfrey talking to Dr. Phil about this one day. And she was saying that her relatives tell her, I'm glad I was beaten, I'm glad I was beaten. And Dr. Phil said, well, they have to say that. Now, personally, I don't believe they have to say that. I think you always have a choice. But it's like within their own minds, because they were helpless in that situation, within their own minds, they had to believe that they were glad, they were grateful that someone beat them. But I don't think that's genuine. I really don't. What do you think?
Well, here it is. You have two choices when someone does something to you that's horrible. You can either be angry and hate them, or you can, like Dr. Phil said, you can create an idea in your mind that it was necessary and therefore you're really better for it, because that's the way you cope with being violated, and that's your trauma. And I hear people
But it
say
is
that,
a violation. It's a violation.
Saying,
how can that possibly be a good
people.
Thing?
I'm sorry, what was that?
No, I just said it's a violation. You just said it's a violation. It is a violation. So how can that be a good thing?
How can it be a good thing when someone has infringed upon your right to, in your own body, be in a state of comfort and peace? And they have caused you pain. How is that ever good? When they could have, if they had
pain and fear.
Pain and fear.
Physical pain and emotional pain and fear.
They could have easily helped you understand why something that you did was hurtful or harmful or dangerous. They could have helped you understand that in a way that was peaceful and calm. It did not require pain.
Well, you might think that, and I might think that, but not everybody is on the same page. And I think I might have told you this before, Naima, but there was a guy who was working, I think he was working for one of the churches, local, and we used to always pass each other and say, hi, how you doing? One day I was sitting in the park, and he came by, and we started talking. And I don't know if I was talking to him about nonviolent communication in VC, but he started telling me all these reasons why it's important to beat children, it's a good thing to beat children, and he was beaten. And he worked with young people at this church where he was based. He was working with young people. And he told me all these stories about, well, so-and-so was beaten, and so-and-so was beaten, and it's a good thing. And he started telling me more stories, and I said, no, hang on, wait a minute. Don't tell me any more stories, because all you're doing is trying to tell me that the end justifies the means. And he said, it does. And I said, it doesn't. And then I said, well, you know, we don't have to use violence against children to get them to do what we want. And he was so shocked. He was so shocked that I used the word violence. He looked really, really hurt. And he said,
oh,
violence? very strong term to use. I said, well, it's a very strong thing to do. I said, if you're beating someone to force them to do what you want, that's violence. And he wasn't hearing that. He said, it's teaching. I said, you don't have to use violence to teach a child.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You have people who went to school where that's what happened. If you didn't say the right answer, you could get slapped or hit or beat, or if you did any other thing.
That's right.
But that's like saying, I don't have the intelligence for you to explain this to me. I need to be caused pain. So why would someone say that about themselves if they respect themselves?
Yeah.
There's no way that you would agree that you don't have the intelligence for someone to explain something to you so that you understand you need to be hit, you need to be beat, you need to be caused pain.
Yeah.
You can't respect yourself if you agree to that. And I've heard many, many people try to justify them getting beaten. Because what else do you do? Do you say, well, my parents, whom I love, didn't have the wisdom to know how to raise me without violence? That is correct.
Yeah, but that's the truth, though, isn't it? Most parents do not have the skills to be able to raise their children without violence. That's why we need to upskill parents.
That's it. We have to increase the skills. Because if we're believing that this is how people have to learn, then we'll just keep creating more violent people. Because violence begins.
This is what, speaking as someone from the diaspora, this is what we've been taught for hundreds of years, that black people are brutes and the only really way to get through to them is through violence. And sometimes really, really horrific violence.
And that's what's happened. You look at that's what's taught in the police academy. The way they don't know how to de-escalate a situation if somebody's upset. They only know brutality because that's how they're trained. That's what they believe. And, they're only taught to escalate
violence.
So now, here I have up on the screen, what does the Bible say about beating children? Well, there's Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Proverbs 23:13. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. Now you got people reading that and preaching that and people who say, you know, they're following God, they believe it. Okay, Proverbs 23:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. So just that thought. You're putting negative intentions into the mind of a child, in your own mind. And I see people doing that all the time. Now, throws their bottle across the room, maybe because they don't like how it tastes or whatever, or, you know, they're just frustrated, and you decide that they're disrespecting you. And so you start beating that two-year-old because they threw the bottle and said, no! And so you decide that this two-year-old is disrespecting your authority as a parent, so you start spanking them. Is that intelligent?
That's right, because your ego is so fragile that a two-year-old has to respect you and has to behave in a way that you think indicates respect.
Yes, and it's your own. Anytime an adult person accuses a child of disrespecting them, it's because that person feels inside that they're not worthy of respect.
Yeah, that person feels insecure.
Other people's behavior as confirming what you already fear about yourself.
Yes.
And it has nothing to do with
fear. But, you know, there's so many people who brought up that way. And that's another thing that happens in 12 years of slavery. On Sunday, which is meant to be the day off for the enslaved, they have to sit there listening to the plantation owner reading to them from the Bible about why they should be beaten.
Yes. Yes. And so, I mean, how deep is the brainwashing? So now here it says Deuteronomy 22:21, then they shall bring out the young woman to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death with stones because she has done an outrageous thing in Israel by whoring in her father's house. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. So here it is. This
but
is
doing
this
what?
You stone them to death because, what, if she has sex at in her house, and if she's caught having sex, this is how she's supposed to be treated. She's supposed to be stoned.
So that's a good reason to stone someone to death, right? Because they decided to have sex?
Yeah, right. You need to die because you had
sex. That's a good reason.
I'm
sorry, but it's just so absurd. And the thing is, as well, the way the term rod is used in the Bible, most people interpret it in a particular kind of way, which is an instrument of violence. But if you remember from the 23rd Psalm, it says, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. So the term rod is kind of ambiguous, actually. A rod can be used, you know, like those hooked sticks that the shepherds used to use. If a ram was lost, they could use the rod to rescue the lamb and bring it back into the fold.
Right.
So, you
and
know, the way the term rod is used in the Bible is it's kind of ambiguous, really.
Yes. Now, I'm going to throw this thought out here because I know it's controversial, but it's John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son that whoever believed in him should not perish but have eternal life. Now, the
yeah,
idea...
I've heard that somewhere before, yeah.
The idea is that God had to have someone be tortured and beaten and bleed to death in order to forgive human beings.
Yeah.
That thought is at the core of Christian belief. And I love my Christian brothers and sisters.
Yes.
But if you do not understand the experience that Jesus had nothing to do with God needing to punish someone, you are going to agree to all of these acts of cruelty and all of these other verses because you don't understand what Jesus was demonstrating in that experience, and it had nothing to do with God needing to punish someone for your misbehavior by making them be tortured to death. What
yeah,
Jesus
love
said,
his only begotten son.
And we are all sons and daughters of the Creator. We're all expressions of God. We're all of us. And this is what Jesus taught. And I'm going to advocate, and I know she's busy, but I'm putting out there in the universe, I want you to look up a book, Jesus, My Autobiography, in which he explained that what he was demonstrating to his disciples, that you are not your body. No one can kill you because you are an eternal being.
Okay.
So you
okay.
have to fear people because they threaten to kill you. You existed before you were in this body. You will exist after you're in this
okay.
body. You are not this.
Well, as you know, I don't believe in a creator, and I don't worship a creator. But if you do worship a creator, it seems to me you want to worship someone who is loving and compassionate and kind.
Absolutely.
Not someone who would, you know, condemn his own child to a terrible, terrible death. You know, one of my favorite films is Spartacus, and it's a true story about this uprising of enslaved people in ancient Rome, and the leader was called Spartacus, and in the end he gets crucified, and they crucify, I think, 1,000 people or something. And you know, you get a sense from that what a terrible, terrible thing it was to do, to crucify someone, what a terrible death it was.
Yes.
To condemn
it's
someone
like a
to.
Yes.
Sorry, can you repeat that, please? Something's just gone wrong with my phone.
It's a slow, torturous death.
Yes.
That's why
we yes.
And what kinds of people would enjoy doing that? So
But, I mean, my favorite scene in Spartacus is the bit where the Roman is saying, you know, I'll give a reward. I can't remember what he offers them, but I'll give a reward to anyone here who identifies Spartacus. And, of course, one person stands up and says, I'm Spartacus, and another person stands up and says, I'm Spartacus. And Kirk Douglas is looking around thinking, all these people are taking on my death. You know, they're sacrificing themselves for me. And in the end, he stands up as well and says, I'm Spartacus, which is the truth. But it's so moving. It's so moving because he gave these people a glimpse of freedom, a glimpse of liberation. They were willing to die for him. And they did. And I find
powerful.
That so uplifting and so moving.
Powerful message. Well, that's the thing. When
and, you know
longer...
we've been talking about toxic masculinity, but that's masculinity in a positive sense. People who are willing to stand up and fight and, you know, part of in that movie they show when after the gladiatorial games were finished and that night each gladiator was given a woman to spend the night with. And it's a really wonderful film. I mean, you need to see that film and see the look on these women's faces. Anybody who says that enslaved women were sexy and that's why the men wanted her because she was sexy, you need to see this film and see the look on these women's faces. And the looks on their faces says everything. They don't look sexy. They just look like people who are being forced to have sex with someone they don't want to have it with. And, you know, that speaks volumes right there, that scene, just the look on these women's faces. And, you know, he, as a man, stands up for this woman and protects her and ends up, you know, she ends up being his partner and they have a child together. But to me, that's positive masculinity is protecting women and children. Forming strong bonds with your male friends and protecting women and children.
Yeah. So I think that the way we think about violence being okay, the way we think about oppression being okay, the way we think about the cruelty of whether it's beating women, beating children, beating anybody into submission being okay, that is what we have to evolve out of spiritually. Teachings that are out of alignment with the Creator, the energy of the creation is only love. It's only love, regardless of whatever your religion believes. When it comes through the filter of a human mind that has been raised with brutality, it gets reinterpreted as condoning brutality.
Yes,
I believe every religion started out with the basic truth of love. Whether it's Buddhism, Hinduism, Judaism, even Christianity, at its core, at its base, the teachings of Jesus were based on the universal love and the creative spirit of love that brought us into being. It was not about brutality or you had to beat the devil out of somebody, beat the evil out of your child, or humiliate this woman because she had sex. None of those things come from the Creator, the creative energy of the universe. None of that. But coming through the filter of a human, live in a society where people brutalize each other as a culture, then you end up saying, well, God said this. No, you said this. You are like the filter.
You, and you're blaming God for your own bad behavior. Because you're not treating people the way you would want to be treated, which is like one of the main teachings that Jesus gave us. And personally, as a Buddhist, I believe that Jesus was very influenced by the Buddhist teaching. Because there are people who will say that Jesus actually went to India. And it was at a time when India was a Buddhist country. So I think if you look at the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament, and it may be controversial, but this is what I think, that the New Testament was very focused on love, compassion, and also taking personal responsibility. Like, never mind the speck in your neighbor's eye. Take the log out of your own eye. That is one of my favorite Bible biblical teachings, and it's all about taking responsibility, taking personal individual responsibility. So personally, I believe that was very influenced by the Buddhist teachings.
Well, again,
in the Old Testament, eye for an eye, but in the New Testament, it's don't throw stones. If you live in a glass house, don't throw stones.
Let he who is without sin
throw the first stone.
So that would eliminate all the stonings to death of all the people, regardless of what you think they did, you know, stoning women for having all of that. That eliminates all of that. And if people really want to know, and again, I'm going to advocate this book, Jesus, My Autobiography, written through Tina Louise Spalding. You can look it up, Tina Louise Spalding, S-P-A-L-D-I-N-G. I post some of her things on my Facebook page sometimes.
Okay.
So look it up, Jesus, My Autobiography. And Jesus,
but there's another
whole
book
work,
I want to mention as well, which is A Course in Miracles.
All of those.
Can
things.
I just
and
mention A Course in Miracles?
A Course in Miracles, another book. That
yeah, because that is meant to have been dictated by Jesus. I spent a lot of time, I spent several years studying A Course in Miracles before I became a Buddhist. And that book is said to be dictated by Jesus.
Just like the book Jesus, My Autobiography. Two books that the energy and consciousness of the one we know as Jesus had written so that the teachings that he brought could be interpreted the way they were meant to be and not misinterpreted. Even understanding the crucifixion, not being him taking on the punishment of the world and God wanting him to be tortured to death as punishment for people, but him trying to help people not be afraid of death because death is an illusion. No one ends their life.
Very interesting.
And you can master your mind so that. And he said most of the time, which I know y'all don't want to hear this, but I can't talk now. So, look, he said most of the time during what they say, oh, he suffered, his consciousness had already left his body. He was not suffering
okay.
your sin. When you master your mind, and people who know this, like you said, yogis and things like that, travel to India, a lot of those abilities to disengage, disconnect from your physical body and physical pain, there are people on this earth that had mastered that already.
Yes. It's really funny you saying this, Naima, because I've just written a short story about that very thing. But that's one of the things that happens in the short story, is that people have mastered their minds to the point where they don't even feel extreme pain that's being inflicted on them.
Yeah. So that, you know, the whole worship of suffering thing, that is so much part of Christianity, he was not suffering for you because he had mastered his mind and could disengage from that experience. And
that
there's
is really
so much
interesting.
That changes your perception of what was happening and changes the idea that you're sin and need to be beaten into submission. So all of that misinterpretation of his teaching. And we're going to benefit from the wisdom of a being that came among us to raise our consciousness. Then we have to properly interpret what he taught so that we're not taking his teachings and putting it back into our same distorted thinking of hostility and violence toward each other and justifying the oppression of women, justifying the beating of children, justifying the cruelty that keeps reproducing cruelty. If you want the violence to end, stop recreating it in misteachings.
I love the way you're so passionate about this. I love it. It's brilliant. But you have to think about all those things. If you just think, well, God told us to do this, then that's sort of like you don't have to take responsibility for your own actions. You don't even have to take responsibility for your own thoughts because you're just doing what God told you to do, you see? This is the mentality that I have a problem with.
You know, we have an internal guidance system that tells us if something that we're receiving is right or wrong. If something doesn't feel right, it's because it's not right. If you got to force yourself to believe something, it's not right. If you got to force yourself to believe, well, it really was good that I got spanked because I needed it. And you know in your heart that you had the intelligence to understand. If somebody had just had the skills to explain it, you did not have to be caused pain. You could have been helped to understand because you have the intelligence. You know that.
Yes.
But how do you deal with the anger that you feel towards your parents if you trusted to treat you well and they didn't because they didn't know any better? Now, we can understand that and forgive our parents for their ignorance. That's also what Jesus demonstrated.
Yes,
forgiving of their ignorance, because that was ignorant what they did. But forgive them because they know not what they do. It's the same thing. You got to go through that parent that beat you with ironing cords and belts and shoes and all these other horrible things and whips and tree branches. You got to forgive them because they didn't know what they were doing. They were traumatizing you. And they have, now you got all these distortions in your personality because you have to try to justify trauma. When you forgive
them. But tell me something, Ayma. I'm a little confused because you just said that we have the intelligence to know better. So therefore, why did they not use their intelligence to do better? Was it just because they were abdicating responsibility for their own behavior?
You know what you've been taught. If you're living in a society where everybody is doing the same thing, even though it's hurtful, unless you choose to risk being criticized for being different, you're going to do the same wrong thing that everybody else is doing so that you can fit
right.
in.
Right. This is what it is. It's a fear of criticism for being different.
Yeah. And they didn't
because
know anything.
My friend Joan Gozia, whose book is called Cotton Picking Paycheck, she... From the time she was born, her parents decided that they were never going to hit her, and they never did. But other parents in the neighborhood would beat their children in front of her sometimes and tell her, this is what you should be getting. In other words, other parents resented her because she wasn't beaten by her parents.
Yeah. We talked about that. I think we talked about that on a show this week. I can't remember whose show it was, but the whole idea of you not getting beat. Oh, I know. Zoe was talking about that on her Thursday show. The fact that violence, you know, the whole culture in China. Because on a Wednesday, on the show that we did with our children, they talked to the children in China and asked questions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions was, and then they asked the teacher, you know, they interviewed the teacher in China, and they asked, you know, what are the consequences, you know, if someone misbehaves, do they do detention and all that kind of thing. And what she explained is that you write an essay, like a self-reflection. How did what I do hurt others and hurt myself? You have to, you know, think about what you did. So it's not a punishment thing. It's, you figure out how to correct your behavior and understand how you hurt people. And so Zoe, on her Thursday show, she was observing that. She said, that is how Chinese culture is. It's, see, when they are disturbing the harmony. So
right.
If a child misbehaves, that child has to reflect on what did they do to disturb the harmony and what should they have done.
Right, right. But there's also a lot of violence in Chinese culture as well. There's a lot of violence towards children. I read some dreadful, dreadful things about what was done to children. And then I found out recently under Mao's regime that, you know, they would have these discussions. They were supposed to sit down and discuss, you know, have you disturbed the harmony or something. But what they were actually doing was beating people. You know, there'd be a whole bunch of, like maybe half a dozen people, and they would beat someone because they said that he stepped out of line or something.
So as a human family, we need to master the ways of peace that are reflective of the creative energy of the universe, and none of that involves causing pain. We like to believe that there's a hell where people are suffering that God throws them into, but the reality is, and people say, well, no one's ever died and come back to tell the story. Well, that's not true either, because all over the internet,
no, it's
look
not.
Up experience, and you will have many, there are millions of people who have, in fact, died and come back, and they're not verifying.
Yeah, well,
religion.
I believe that we all have. I believe that we all have, and the Buddha said that he, you know, had many, many thousands of lifetimes, and the Buddha said, every animal is my mother. Right, because at some point he was every different species on this planet before he became human.
So when you understand that, you have respect for all life because you've been all life.
Yes.
And that's the thing that Dolores Cannon, the hypnotherapist who founded Q QHHT, the self-healing hypnosis, the quantum healing hypnosis technique, when she took people back to various lives, she said, the human experience as a soul, you have to be everything so that you understand everything. That's the process through which you go through life so that you understand how everything is interconnected and you
yes.
have respect for life. So,
that this is
what life is. It's living, it's having different life experiences so that you can grow in your understanding and wisdom of how everything is interconnected and how your choices affect all other life.
I do agree that everything and everyone is interconnected, but I also think we have to start from where we are. Right?
Yes.
We can't just go through all these different life experiences in order to learn. I mean, that's fine, but we also have to start from where we are. Wherever we are, our ethical practice will teach us, you know, to avoid hurting others, avoid causing pain to ourselves and others.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we have to start here and now. We have to start from today, doing what we can, and we'll continue to learn and grow with time. You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I agree. And, you know, everybody who's had many of who've had the near-death experience, they explain that what you experience when you leave this body and you review your life, you experience what you made people feel. And if there's any hell,
right.
it's going to be the hell pain that you feel that you've caused other people, knowing that you hurt people, even if it's something like,
And this is what my ethical practice teaches me. You know, when I reflect back on things that I've said and things that I've done, I realize sometimes I've hurt others without intending to. So it's all a learning process, you see.
So
we're
going
to make mistakes, but it's all a learning process. We try not to make the same mistake again. And
right.
it is so painful. When I realize I've caused harm to another living being, it is so painful. I have a desire to never, never, ever do that again. Nobody has to beat me to make me feel that pain.
That's the whole point. No one has to beat you in order for you to feel regret that you've hurt someone. So for people to say, well, my parents beat me, no, you could have understood that you hurt someone without you being caused physical pain. And that's right. You can teach a child empathy for others, and they will carry that the rest of their lives, and they will consciously not hurt. But if you believe that people are born bad, born sinful, born mean, born with the devil in them, then you're going to justify cruelty. And we as a human family to evolve to a higher understanding so that we stop reproducing this violence. We did this.
Yes.
Everywhere over there, the war, we did this. We can't blame anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We all have to be responsible for this because we keep teaching that this is what God says.
You know, and then you look at what's happening in Gaza right now, yeah? Look at what's happening. The Israelis think they're doing the right thing, right? Hamas think they're doing the right thing. They're both sides believe that they're doing what God told them to do. And all they're doing is causing suffering to each other. That's all they're doing is causing suffering for themselves and each other. It's horrendous. This is what human beings, you know, we perpetuate the violence. We don't need a God or someone to tell us. This is what we're doing to each other.
Yes, we are. We're doing this to each other. And everybody on the planet is contributing either to the peace or the violence with their own thoughts.
Yeah.
If you can energetically think in terms of wanting the well-being for all parties involved and wanting them to come to a point of understanding, compassion, forgiveness, and sharing, if you can put forth that thought and that energy, you can help the situation. But if you're angry...
Yes, and I believe that it starts with self. It starts with empathy for self. When you have empathy for yourself, then your heart can open more others.
Yes. So energetically, we need to help that situation by sending the energy of compassion, forgiveness, understanding, and harmony, because it is possible. These human beings trapped in a cycle of violence and vengeance for violence and vengeance for violence, and they're stuck in a cycle, and they can't get out of it without help. Somebody has to, some people, situation differently. Because what they're demonstrating is what happens when you can't get out of that cycle of incorrect thought.
That's right.
It just
goes
on and on. So we have to help them get out of that cycle of incorrect thought. God is not telling you to kill anybody. And this is what is difficult for people who are religious to comprehend. Because people who are religious, it's hard for them to let go of the idea that perhaps what they have been taught was incorrect. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Everybody can hear the voice of God for themselves. You don't need to ask somebody with a clerical degree or a school where they went to divinity school and memorized a bunch of verses. Just go to the creative energy in your own soul, and you can get an answer. And when something feels right, it is right. If something feels wrong, it's wrong. Trust your inner guidance. And we can make this a place of peace.
Yes, we can do that. Yeah.
Yes.
We have to take responsibility for creating peace in our lives and in the world. And when we come together, we are so much more powerful.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Well, of course, you've been listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show live from London, Success Strategies with Jana. And we're going to come to you again with the What Do Men Want? Because we still want to hear What Do Men Want. We'll get a chance
to hear.
We
got kind of off the subject, but that's okay. We'll come back to it.
Part of what causes the distress is that we keep believing that someone has to be hurt in order for someone else to be happy, and that's incorrect. You know, women don't have to be oppressed for men to get love or nurturing or even sexual fulfillment. You know, it's not meant to be a painful thing for either party. We're all here to love be loved. So we can do this without anybody being made to feel bad. So we have to figure out how to do it. We can.
Yeah, and we can figure it out together.
We can figure it out together. So, well, it's time for us to go. And we want to, of course, invite you all to come on back to the Female Solution and Soul Purpose Healing with Viana tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. And I believe it's probably in the middle of the night, GMT, but that's all right.
It's probably about 1 a.m. where I am, so I may not make it, but I'm sure it'll be very good.
We appreciate you so much. Thank you, Jana. We appreciate you, and we look forward to seeing you again next month. And until that time, we want all of you to continue to shine your light, because you are the light of the creative energy of the universe, as are we all. So shine your light.
That's a beautiful thought to end on. Thank you very much for that, Naima.
And we will see you all next time on the Female Solution. Listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Start from the beginning and greet our global family all over the world.
Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing, share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join us every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time
as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saubona. In Senegal, Nangadek. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia. Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all. Join us live on the on-air radio network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.